Talk Shoe.
Recorded live.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Pastor Eli James here, along with William Fink, and this is the Christogenos Show. And for those who have any questions about that, Christogenos means the genetics of Jesus Christ, okay? And, of course, we, true Israelites, the Anglo-Saxon, Celtic, and Caucasian people of this world, are that Christogenos, that seed line of Yahshua Messiah, the Hebrew, Shemitic, Israelite, Anglo-Saxon seed line, okay? And no Jews are part of that seed line. And no Jew ever had anything to do with writing the Old Testament. And no Jew is an Israelite, okay? So I hope I didn't shatter your your worldview in just a few short seconds. How are you doing, Bill?
Hello, praise Yahweh.
Yeah. Well, I think we're going to continue with our study on Jeremiah, but I think we have a few announcements to make, okay? And just before we went on the air, you said that your website cracked $100,000.
It cost me more than that in time to. Cost me more than that in time to put it up at $1 an hour.
Right.
Yes. Christogenia.org has made the top 100,000 websites in the world according to the Alexa.com rankings. I can't guarantee that we're going to stay there, but we're hovering right around there, and we broke it for the first time last night, and Yahweh willing, we will stay there.
Yes. Very good.
But we also have Christogenia streaming radio now.
Uh-huh.
We're streaming radio on the internet. The Christogenia internet radio station is publicly listed on the Shoutcast internet radio listings.
Okay.
Under educational, not under religious, because I figure we'll do better with the atheists than we would with the evangelical wing nut, right?
Right.
The raptured crowd, right?
That's
the,
right.
The URL to put into your media player or your iPod applet or however you can listen to streaming radio is christogenia.org/8000/live. The URL to listen to Christogenia Radio on the internet is the chat page at christogenia.org. You'll see a radio and chat link at the top menu bar. It's christogenia.org/chat.
Okay.
And I'm going to put that, since they're our programs, right, I'm going to put the listening capability on anglosaxonisrael.com also, hopefully.
Okay. All right.
So that people will be able to listen on anglosaxonisrael.com.
Okay. And so basically your radio, you have old radio shows of what, Christogenos, how about your TeamSpeak shows? Are they streaming too? Is that part of the, you got a rotating schedule of shows? Is that what you got there?
Well, the holy grail would be to integrate TeamSpeak with Shoutcast, right?
Okay.
And that's not doable yet. Boxar and I are planning on, I've already started looking into it to no avail. Boxar and I are going to look into that. Hopefully we'll be able to do that in the near future. I can't make any promises, but Christogenia is going to expand to 4 24/7 channels.
Okay. What does
right
that mean?
Right now, the first channel is simply looping the Christogenos program.
Oh, okay.
Okay. I'm going to, I have a second server at Christogenos.net, and I'm going to, or Christogenia.net, either place brings you to the same server, right?
Uh-huh.
And I'm going to initiate another station there and run one channel and loop the Yahweh's Covenant People programs on it. But then, hopefully by the end of this month, I'll have each of those servers running two channels.
Okay.
So that I can loop four sets of programs on them. And the Sunday night program I do with Brian will be looped on one of them. All of those Bolshevik Russia, Nazi Germany, they're good programs, right?
Yeah.
I like to hope so anyway. They'll be looped on one of the channels, and the other programs I did, perhaps the with Clifton and the Voice of Christian Israel programs that I filled in for you, and the 999 and 10-10-10 programs, I'll take all of those and put them under an other category and loop them possibly on a fourth channel.
Right.
Now, I have the capability to do live programs on Shoutcast, and make schedules and all that sort of thing. I don't have the time for it, but I have the capability for it, right? And it's really, it doesn't, I can do a live program on Shoutcast right now if I wanted to, but I can't do it with multiple hosts. Uh-huh. And that's another technical challenge.
Okay.
You know, and it's doing all of this stuff on a shoestring budget, and one technician is enough, right?
Right. Well, it sounds like you've been really busy, congratulations on breaking the 100,000 mark in the world rankings of websites. And I don't know how to check my own, but you said that mine broke the 300,000 mark. So, how many websites are there in the world?
Well, there's 234 million websites.
Uh-huh.
When I first
wow.
made the Alexa rankings, ChrisDeGhenny.org. I purchased the domain name. I registered the domain name January 6th I was home for a month, right, of 2009.
Uh-huh.
And about 8 or 10 months later, I checked it on Alexa when I started reading up on Alexa and just for the hell of it, and I was like 13 million or something, right?
Yes.
After a year, I was about 3.5 million. And as we discussed about 4 months ago, maybe I'm guessing that we had broke the 1 million mark, and it's just been exponential since then. My site traffic has probably doubled in the last 6 months.
Uh huh. Great.
Where I was getting 200 to 250 visitors a day back over the summer, even in June and July. I'm getting 450 to 550 a day now.
Uh-huh.
And that's you know, I have an advantage over you where I have
Well, you're attracting Nazis.
Yeah, right. I have a greater area of interest, and my website is really like a whole bunch of websites, right?
Uh-huh.
And Alexa rolls them all up together. So the Mind Comp site, the forum. I mean, ChrisDeGhenny itself gets about 350 visitors a day at least, the last time I looked, and that was a month ago.
Uh-huh.
But the MindComp site gets another 150 to 200, and a lot of those visitors only get counted once,
yeah,
even though they go to both sites, right?
Right.
But the
right.
MindComp and the Saxon Messenger site gets about 100 visitors a day, and the Swift site gets about 30 visitors a day, and Clifton site gets visitors more than the Swiss site, but I don't remember how many. So it all contributes to my numbers, right?
Right.
But ChrisDeGhenny is really a complex of websites, not one site.
Okay. Anything else on the media?
Oh,
front?
That's enough news for me. That's about all I can
say. Yeah. You're not working hard enough, Bill. You need a secretary. Okay, you need a secretary so you can get some sleep. So, and I've been busy too. First of all, let me announce that Pastor Visser had his day in court. I think it was Wednesday, and all the charges were dropped and the case was dismissed. And I'm not, you know, he hasn't been sending out emails as to what the court case was, but I'm assuming that what it was, that he got caught up in the aftermath of the Hal Turner scandal, okay? And he just, he was only with the Hal Turner radio network for a couple of months. I think the reason he joined was to try to, you know, number one, you know, increase his listenership. And, and I guess the Hal Turner network had a lot of listeners, like 100,000 listeners or something, you know? So, he wanted to, you know, get the Christian Identity word out, and that's why he joined the Turner Network, but he didn't realize that Turner was a federal informant, okay? So and then they were harassing him. They raided his house and things like that. And I think somebody even tried to torch his house on one occasion. So he's been going through some pretty hard times. But now he's been cleared of his court case. I've been trying to get a hold of him. Hopefully he can come on my show on Sunday and tell us all about it now that it's all over with. He supposedly his website is back up too. Okay. So if people want to go there and take a look, I forget the name of his website, Covenant People's Ministry, something like that. So it's great that he's back, and I was hoping that it would all turn out very well for him, because some people seem to think he was an informant too, but I never believed that. And so I'm glad that he's back, and hopefully he'll be online and be with us, joining our our radio ministry once again. Okay. And I also had to testify in court on Tuesday. One of my local congregants had a situation with his ex-wife. They had a son in common, and she's living in Wisconsin, and he's living here in Chicago. And she tried to get his visitation rights eliminated because he's Christian identity, right? He's a white nationalist, terrorist, racist, right? A hate monger. And so his ex-wife brought charges against him just simply because he is a Christian separatist. And so I had to get involved as a witness, character witness on his behalf, and I explained to the court that Christian identity is indeed a white separatist a religion based on the Bible, and that all of our beliefs are totally supported by Scripture. And by the way, freedom of speech and freedom of religion shall not be abridged, right? First Amendment. And the Constitution of the state of Wisconsin has probably the most liberal, in the good sense of the word, the most liberal language of any freedom of religion clause of all 50 states. It specifies that the state of Wisconsin shall not interfere in the right of conscience of any citizen of the state of Wisconsin, right?
And that was a very important precept in the founding of this country.
That's right. That's right. So initially, this was like the fourth court session, and this was the only one that I testified in. And the first two, the prosecution and the court, that, by that I mean the judge, was very much willing to rule against Tim based on his Christian identity faith. Okay, and so but with our testimony, because Tim also testified on his own behalf, the judge ruled out any discussion of religion from that point on. Okay, so his religion was no longer an issue. Praise Yahweh, total victory for Christian identity in court. So on Tuesday we had a victory. On Wednesday we had a victory. That you're telling us now that you broke the 100,000 mark in the ratings. I broke the 300,000 mark in ratings. And are you sitting down?
Well, of course. I do programs on my elliptical trainer, let me tell you.
All right. I'm getting my own radio show with, I can't remember the name of the network now. I just talked to the guy like 20 minutes ago. It's an already established radio network, like Republic Broadcasting Network. And I'll think
okay,
about,
great.
Yeah, and it's going to be Tuesdays and Thursdays. I'll think of the network, sooner or later. And the micro effect, that's what it is, the micro effect. And I will be on at 7 p.m. Standard Time, Central Standard Time, Tuesdays and Thursdays for 1 hour. It's going to be called the Restoration Hour. Okay.
Wonderful.
It's going to be just like Republic Broadcasting Network. There's going to be commercials, and I talked to the owner, and he said he's okay. He's okay with our doctrine. Just don't engage in name calling.
well, right, and there's no reason for yeah, yeah. Well, it depends on how you want to define name calling, right?
Well, he said I shouldn't use the expression hook-nosed kike for one thing. Right?
Well, right, and that expression doesn't really have to be used in a scholarly
right.
setting.
Right. It's on FM. It's probably on shortwave. It's not just internet. It has Mark Kornke is on the micro effect. And so again, it's going to be Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 Central, starting next Tuesday.
Well, okay. We'll have to try to look at integrating that with your site also.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and of course, he wants me to, put the link on my site, to promote it, okay? And so Christian identity, folks, is becoming mainstream. It's becoming mainstream.
Yeah, you know, when do you start the micro effect?
Next Tuesday.
Well, maybe Tuesday morning I'll devote a couple hours and make a chat page on Anglo-Saxon Israel.
Okay.
And so that people can sit and chat with each other while they listen to your program.
Okay, yeah, that would be nice. I don't know if the micro effect has a chat feature.
No. You'll have your own chat page.
My own chat. Okay.
And maybe I'll be able to integrate with the program, and they'll be able to listen to it. And if you go to christogenia.org/chat right now, you could listen to the streaming audio and chat at the same time. There's a chat page built right into christogenia.org.
Oh, okay.
That's a live chat, just as good as TalkShoe, right? But it's only a one-channel deal, right?
Yeah.
It's a live chat. It works in real time. It's solid technology, and people can press the play button on a player underneath the chat window and listen to the radio broadcasts that we're recycling as they can type the chat in the chat.
Okay.
And many Eighth Day Woman and Matthew Ott and many of the listeners here have already been hanging out there, and it's actually pulled traffic away from my TeamSpeak server, right?
Okay, yeah, right.
But
right.
No, it can't replace TeamSpeak because it doesn't have the capability for voice conferencing and things like that, right? But it types that, and I hope to use it to attract newer people.
Right, right. And so I talked with the owner, and I told him, well, what I'll probably do is for the first few shows, I'll concentrate on the migration message, you know, identifying which tribe of Israel settled in which modern country, right? And so I could probably devote 3 or 4 months to that subject alone, right? And so wouldn't have to talk about those evil Edomite, Canaanite vipers that are hanging around trying to destroy our race and religion, right? You know, so he just wants me to tone it down a little bit, not do a lot of name calling, and just let the message, you know, bring the good, the positive side of the message, put it that way. Okay, so I'll focus on that, and then so I'll be able to take callers, and I'm sure we'll get a few Jews calling and defending their false religion, you know. So I'll be
well, I'm sure Cheese will find you too.
Right. Yeah. If I could keep him on point, that's okay. Right.
I want to debate him over the 1,000 years.
Okay. Sure. Yeah. Well, I tried to arrange that with Rick Adams on Republic Broadcasting, but he's afraid that the subject matter will just be too inflammatory. So, so maybe Keith can do his own show and you can do one and I could do one, or you and I could do this, because you and I agree about that, right? That the 1,000 years is in the past. It's not after the judgment day. It's before the judgment day.
Well, you know, God is not a failure.
Right.
Joshua Christ is not a failure.
Right.
When he throws Gog and Magog into the lake of fire, they're not coming back.
That's right.
It's done. It's over with.
And they'll be adding fuel to the fire when he throws them in there. Right?
To say that Christ is going to rule for 1,000 years himself.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And then be overthrown by this Gog and Magog. That's just ridiculous.
Well, he's already ruling. He's already ruling in heaven. It's just a question of when he comes back that the Gog and Magog will be tossed into the lake of fire. Now, how can they get out to deceive the world after they've already been tossed in the lake of fire? You know,
and if the world's deceived right now, then Gog and Magog are fulfilling that right now.
That's right.
And if the world's not deceived right now, then whoever makes that claim is just blind.
Right. And then we'll be getting into that because a week from tomorrow night, we should be starting our series on Revelation. Okay. And that's very much toward the end of Revelation, but there's so much interest in that particular subject, maybe we could touch on it before we get there, before we get to chapter 20, just to give people a feel for where we're coming from on this and why the...
I'd rather keep them in suspense. I'm sorry.
Okay. Very good. Very good. But anyway, we'll start that series on Revelation a week from Saturday. We should finish the Epistles of John tomorrow. Okay? All right, so folks, things are working out great. There's no stopping this message because the truth cannot be killed. The truth cannot be killed, and not even an atom bomb can kill the truth, and there's no stopping this message because it is the truth. All right, so let's continue now our series on Jeremiah. How far did we get last time?
Well, we're right at chapter 7.
At the beginning, 7. Okay, any summary or comments on the previous 6 chapters before we start on 7?
I really just have a couple of lines, right?
Okay.
I didn't get to do a whole lot of preparation for today's program, to be honest with you, but
okay.
I am prepared to do the next 2 chapters. And I could always wing it, right? Jeremiah has been issuing an incredible indictment throughout these chapters.
Yes.
Against the remnant of Judah.
Mm-hmm.
And we must bear in mind that this is only a remnant of Judah that we were dealing with now, and because most of them were already deported, right? And much of this is also leveled towards the rest of long ago deported Israel and Judah and Israel that were deported by the Assyrians, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's just to keep us in mind that the people deported by the Assyrians are never completely out of Yahweh's thoughts, right?
Right.
I mean, they are always the scope of this prophecy, even though here we're dealing with a remnant of Judah.
Mm-hmm.
Over the coming chapters, we will see that Judah is constantly warned and chastised by Yahweh through the prophet up to the point that Yahweh promises the permanent, I think it's Jeremiah 18 or 19, the permanent destruction of the city. And once we understand that prophecy, we have to understand it where Jerusalem is mentioned throughout the prophets, unless the city is being specifically referred to, Jerusalem only really it is a prophetic metaphor that refers to the centers of government of his people, wherever they go, right? In most of these end time prophecies.
Yeah.
While we see that the foremost sin of Judah was race mixing,
right,
for which Judah was conspicuously admonished in Jeremiah chapter 2, we will see here that there were also many other sins in Judah, which we will hear about often through these chapters. And mostly, the things I think Yahweh mentions most here and admonishes Judah most here for is not only race mixing, but hypocritical judgment and chasing after the customs of the other nations, right? But hypocritical judgment and bloodshed are two other key sins of Judah. It's quite obvious, once we read these, it's quite obvious, even to the casual observer, that Jerusalem at that time was no better off than New York or Los Angeles are now.
Right.
It's the same situation all over again.
Uh-huh.
Race mixing, chasing after the customs of the aliens, hypocritical judgment, and bloodshed.
Yeah. Racketeering, no doubt. Yeah, and the race traders dealing with Jewish moneylenders and all that sort of thing. It's all happening all over again. And it was all going on then. Yes, yes. Very good. Okay. All right, chapter 7, verse 1. The word that came to Jeremiah from Yahweh saying. Now, of course, these prophets, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Daniel, Ezekiel, and virtually every single one of them all tell us that the word of Yahweh came to them in a vision or in some way that this is Yahweh speaking directly to them. So we're getting it from Yahweh through them. Now, none of these modern televangelists or Judeo-Christians have any understanding like these men did. And so their translations and their interpretations of these verses are worth very little. Especially when they try to twist and distort these words. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, we will see throughout these chapters talk of false and lying prophets priests.
There were
false prophets in that day, too.
Yeah.
And they probably had the preponderance of the people listening to them.
Right. Yeah, like they do today.
Jeremiah, their works, where are their works? Where are their false prophecies? We have no records of them. They're gone.
Yeah.
They're dust. They're history. The works of Jeremiah, Ezekiel, Daniel survived because they made many short-term prophecies which people realized were legitimate and came true, where the works of the false prophets did not survive for the opposite reason. And here we know that if they're false, if they're true prophecies, these true prophets, if their short-term prophecies came true, you had better believe that the long-term prophecies are also going to come true.
Right. No doubt, no doubt. And that's the difference between Christian identity and mainstream Judeo-Christianity, is that we actually believe what the Bible says, right?
We absolutely.
We don't throw the Old Testament away like the New Testament Christians do, and we don't teach a replacement theology like both the Jews and the Judeo-Christians do, right? Judaism
is
actually
replacement theology is a direct violation of the Fifth Commandment.
Right.
Thou shalt not steal. Maybe that's the Sixth Commandment. Yeah. I'm bad.
Thou shalt not impersonate.
Well, right. I'm thinking thou
identity
shalt not
theft.
Kill. Right? They've done that too.
Exactly.
But no, the commandment, thou shalt not steal. I think it's the Sixth Commandment. I scold me if I'm wrong. But
identity
it's a direct
theft.
Violation.
Mm-hmm.
It is identity theft.
That's right. That's the Judaism is identity theft. It's the replacement theology. Very good. Okay, verse 2. Stand in the gate of Yahweh's house and proclaim there this word and say, hear the word of Yahweh, all you of Judah that enter in at these gates to worship Yahweh. Thus says Yahweh of hosts, the Elohim of Israel, amend your ways and your doings, and I will cause you to dwell in this place. Trust you not in lying words, saying the temple of Yahweh are these. Sounds like Jesus came to me in a vision and told me we should race mix, right?
Well, right. And here a law-abiding nation is a stable nation.
Yes. Yes. And those who preach that the law has been done away with are the same people who are preaching race mixing today. Verse 5. For if you thoroughly amend your ways and your doings, if you thoroughly execute judgment, that is justice, between a man and his neighbor, as opposed to standing around and doing nothing when our people are being murdered, raped, and stolen from, okay, by the government and by the Jews, and that's what these Judeo-Christians do. They stand around and do nothing. Verse 6. If you oppress not the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow, and shed not innocent blood in his place, neither walk after other gods to your hurt, then will I cause you to dwell in this place in the land that I gave to your fathers forever and ever. So, now here's a very interesting prophecy, that if they would obey his law, he would allow them to stay in Palestine forever and ever.
Well, right, and he's always telling them, that could be a very confusing verse in the light of other scriptures, right?
Yeah.
However, it is first talked about that Israel would be carried off beyond the Euphrates.
Yes.
All the way back in the book of Numbers.
Okay.
It's in the prophecy of Balaam, right?
Okay.
Where Balaam tried to curse the children of Israel. And he ends up blessing them and over again, right? Three times, I believe. Right?
Yes.
Well, one of the blessings actually says that, nevertheless, the Kenite shall be wasted until Asher shall carry thee away captive. Uh-huh. And thee, the subject of the, is not the Kenite. The subject is the Israelites.
Sure.
Okay? This is in Numbers chapter 24. And it's foreseen by Yahweh that, yes, if they were obedient, that they would be established in Palestine forever. Palestine today, if our ancestors were obedient, Palestine today would be the center of a great white world. No doubt.
Right.
But Yahweh, being God, could not help but foresee that they would not be obedient. And therefore, it states, he stated through the mouth of Balaam. He put those words in Balaam's mouth.
Right.
When Balaam tried to curse the Israelites and basically told them that Asher would carry them away captive, meaning the Assyrians.
Yes.
That's Numbers chapter 24.
Yes. But it's very obvious that since the Judahites weren't law-abiding, they had to be taken away from Jerusalem. And, of course, that's what Jeremiah is all about in talking about the Babylonian captivity and setting
well,
it all
well,
up.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But to repeat in a nutshell, if they were good, they'd have stayed forever, but Yahweh knew they'd be bad.
Right.
Knew that they'd be taken away.
Right.
Even though he assures them, if you'd have been good, you'd be here forever.
Yes, yes, very good. Okay, verse 8. Behold, you trust in lying words that cannot profit, just like our white Christian brethren today. They trust in lying words. And they don't get the difference between deceit and truth. They just don't know. Verse 9. Will you steal, murder, and commit adultery, and swear falsely, and burn incense to Baal, and walk after other gods whom you know not? The only thing the modern Christians aren't doing in this list is burning incense to Baal. Verse 10, and come and stand before me in this house, which is called, actually the Catholics do. I forgot about them. And come and stand before me in this house, which is called by my name, and say, we are delivered to do all these abominations. He's not going to save us so that we can continue to sin. Verse 11, is this house which is called by my name become a den of robbers in your eyes? Behold.
And we see that Christ quoted that in three of the Synoptic Gospels, it appears, right? And
right.
Christ
right.
referred to this verse.
Yeah.
That his house was called a house of prayer, and under the Edomites in Judea, it had become a den of thieves.
Yes, yes. Behold, even I have seen it, says Yahweh. But go you now to my place, which was in Shiloh, where I set my name at the first. And
this is a reference to the first resting place of the Ark of the Covenant.
Okay.
And we see that in Joshua chapter 18, verses 8 through 10, and I'd like to read verse 10.
Oh, okay.
And Joshua cast lots for them in Shiloh before the Lord, or Yahweh, and there Joshua divided the land unto the children of Israel, according to their divisions.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So that's why we have his statement here.
Okay. Shiloh. Okay. But go you now to my place, which was in Shiloh, where I set my name at the first, and see what I did to it for the wickedness of my people Israel. And Yahweh judges his people.
Well, right. He's saying go to Shiloh and see what happened to Shiloh.
Right.
Because it was a desolation.
Right.
All of the Assyrians had taken Israel away, and most of the land at this time was still vacant.
Yes.
Edomites had designs on it, as we read in Ezekiel, but they hadn't populated it.
Yes.
And to the extent that the Israelites had before them.
Yeah, and it just amazes me that there are Christian denominations who actually teach that Yahweh does not chastise his people. It's incredible. But there are modern denominations that actually teach that.
Well, that's the words of the devil to Eve.
That's right.
You won't die. You won't be punished if you
you're already saved.
Partake of this fruit over here. You'll be all right.
Yeah. Have some pork chops. it won't hurt you, you know. Send your money to the Israeli state. It's good. Verse 13. And now, because you have done all these works, says Yahweh, and I spoke to you, rising up early and speaking, but you heard not. And I called you, but you answered not. Now, all these Judeo-Christians who think they hear the voice of the Lord, and they claim to have the Holy Spirit, but there's no truth in them. I'm sorry. If they don't have the Spirit of truth, they don't have the Holy Spirit. Verse 14. Therefore will I do to this house, which is called by my name, wherein you trust, and to the place which I gave to you and to your fathers, as I have done to Shiloh. And I will cast you out of my sight, as I have cast out all your brethren, even the whole seed of Ephraim. Now, of course, he's talking, Ephraim symbolizes the entire 10 tribes of the north, okay? Because the house of Ephraim, the house of Israel, the 10 northern tribes, 10 lost tribes, those are synonymous terms when speaking of, you know, He didn't cast out just Ephraim. He cast out all 10 tribes. And then we know that the great numbers of Judah and Benjamin were added to those numbers.
Okay. Well, right, 46 fenced cities, and it's funny the way they're not really mentioned in the prophets, and I think that's because Yahweh challenged us to go read Kings, right? And,
sure.
And go read the accounts and what happened to these people, because the Assyrians took everybody except the inhabitants of Jerusalem and whatever refugees from the surrounding area could flee the Assyrian armies and make it to Jerusalem,
right,
which included some Israelites and Benjaminites and Levites
right,
as well, right?
And Asherites as well, yes, exactly.
Now there's an interesting comparison here in verse 13 where Yahweh says, I spoke unto you, rising up early and speaking, but you heard not, and I called you, and you answered not. That's an exact parallel to Christ's behavior during his ministry, where he would wake up at the crack of dawn every morning, go to the temple, and speak to the people.
Yeah. Okay, but they answered not. Did not know. Very few people did. Okay, because most of them really weren't aware who he was and what was actually happening. Okay, verse 16, therefore pray not you for this people, neither lift up cry nor prayer for them, neither make intercession to me, for I will not hear you. Again, Yahweh does not hear the prayer of a sinner.
And you can't even have intercession made for a sinner.
Yeah, yeah, it's a waste of time. So all these, you know, one of the most common questions that we hear from, you know, mainstream Christianity is, why aren't our prayers answered? You know, why don't my prayers get answered? Well, you can't always get a Mercedes Benz just by asking Yahweh, right?
Well, I'm going to sound callous here, too, right? And that's exactly true. Oh, Lord, won't you buy me a Mercedes-Benz?
Right.
I'm never getting one. That's, you know what? I'm going to keep driving my 93 Ford, right? I'm going to sound callous here, right? And it may not sound right, but if you really think about it, I'm sure you'll find that it is right. When I get prayer requests and things like that, I usually ignore them.
Okay.
And that might sound bad, but I don't know the people that somebody else wants me to pray for.
Right.
And it could go through 2-3 parties. You know, if Pastor X sends you a prayer request and you send it to Pastor Z and he sends it to Pastor Y, well, do you know the people Pastor X wants a prayer request for? I don't.
Right.
How do I know they're sinners or not?
Yeah, right.
And the way I look at it is, and it sounds callous, but it's the only way. It is, well, let Yahweh's will be done. Because maybe he's chastising that person that's in distress.
Right.
If it was my brother and I could help him and I knew him, of course I would help him.
Sure.
Right? And if Yahweh didn't want his help, he'd stop me from helping him. Don't doubt it.
Right.
But,
exactly.
Yeah, how do I know who I'm getting a prayer request for? I don't know this person. He might be at the casinos every weekend and watching porno flicks from Monday to Friday.
Yeah, right.
I'm not going to pray for anybody
But his spleen does need to be healed.
Right. Well, yeah, right, of course.
So he can go back to the casino, right?
And that's exactly my point. And
uh-huh.
It sounds callous, but I don't want your prayer requests unless I know those people and I can understand that they're good people who are just going through a time of trial. And then my prayer is going to be limited to asking Yahweh to help them through their trial.
Right.
Because we have to go through our trials. And life's a test. We're told that in Paul. We're told it in Peter. We're told it in James. Life is a test.
Mm-hmm.
And we are judged by how we face our tests and our attitudes towards our God and our brethren.
Yeah, okay, very good, very good. Okay, verse 17, see you not what they do in the cities of Judah and in the streets of Jerusalem? The children gather wood, and the fathers kindle the fire, and the women knead their dough to make cakes to the Queen of Heaven, and to pour out drink offerings to other gods, that they may provoke me to anger. Ishtar.
Well, you know I got some notes on the Queen
yes,
of Heaven.
Right.
The Queen of Heaven is only mentioned in the Bible here and four times in Jeremiah chapter 44.
Okay.
In Acts chapter 7, verse 42, we see it mentioned that the children of Israel had, quote-unquote, worshiped the host of heaven.
Uh-huh.
Now this is going to sound, it's pagan. It's
sure.
There's no doubt it's pagan, right?
Yeah.
But I'm going to say that this entire paradigm I believe, is a double entendre. Okay. It has a dual meaning, carried down from the most ancient times, all right?
Yeah.
First, let me say that both, and this is an example, right, because there are other accounts in other Adamic cultures. Both the Egyptian pharaohs and the Roman emperors were at times said to become one among the stars of heaven when they die,
uh-huh.
right? And as far as this is concerned, and I'm going to refer to the first century philosobabbler, Philo Judahius,
okay.
who equated the substance of angels and the substance of the glorified human body to that of actual stars.
Oh, okay.
Now, let me say that Paul did, too,
uh-huh.
but Paul's making an allegory,
uh-huh.
and there's a difference between the way Paul approached the topic and the way the philosobabbler Philo approaches the topic, right?
right.
Yeah, I coined the word just for Philo, right?
Right.
A Jewish philosopher is a philosobabbler, like
right.
a Jewish psychiatrist is a psychobabbler.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, legitimately, the Apostle Jude, He called the fallen angels wandering stars.
Okay.
And the children of Israel are often in the scripture likened to his stars. But these are metaphors. They're not references to physical stars.
Right.
In the earliest Egyptian inscriptions, we see God is seen as the sun.
Right.
And it's evident that the sun is used as a metaphor for Yahweh, our God, and his Christ, who is the light of the world.
Sure.
But that doesn't mean that we worship the sun.
Right.
And our people who had these beliefs legitimately used these allegories over time began to take them literally and actually worship these objects. Right.
Right? Yeah, and Glenn Beck is a star, too.
Yes, he is. But now Paul attributed all the world's false religions to the fallen angels. And that, I'm sure, is a correct attribution, right?
Yes.
And the pagan religions and all the false religions of the world. And we see that the host of heaven, quote unquote, can mean the physically heavenly bodies, or it can mean Yahweh and his angels as they are equated to those bodies. But it's an allegory. The simple pagan mind what would turn that allegory into something real and start worshiping suns and moons and stars, right?
Right.
Now, later pagans imagined, and when I say later pagans, I mean those of the Israelites that turned pagan in the kingdom years and the surrounding nations, right? They're probably following the damn Canaanites. Later pagans imagined that God required a wife,
mm-hmm.
which at one time was likened to the pagan moon goddess Ashtoreth.
Right.
Ashtoreth is mentioned twice in 1 Kings 11 and again in 2 Kings 23:13. Now, Ashtoreth was the Greek Astarte and was deified as the evening star by the Hebrew Phoenicians, as well as the Syrians and the Etruscans and some of the other surrounding nations, both Adamic nations and Canaanite nations, probably due to the influence of the Canaanites.
Uh-huh.
This is the reference to the Queen of Heaven. That's what it means. The pagan Israelites and the Canaanites and the other nations started to consider the moon the wife of the sun, and the sun representing Yahweh. The moon was the Queen of Heaven.
Right.
So they baked moon-shaped crescent rolls in commemoration of the Queen of Heaven.
Yes.
And that's how, and Clifton talked about it in one of his early teaching letters. He talked about, and there's
okay.
a couple of scriptures that could be cited. I don't have them off the top of my head. But the Midianites, from the time of Jacob and Esau, the Midianites were actually using the crescent symbol
uh-huh.
and worshiping the Queen of Heaven.
Well, it's funny
because
as I was reading this, I imagined hot cross buns. Right?
Well, right, but don't imagine the croissant. The Austrians baked the croissant
yes.
in honor of their defeat of the Turks at the Siege of Vienna.
Right. And they were Muslims.
In the late 17th century, but the Austrians didn't invent the croissant, right?
right.
You see it right here. That these are crescent-shaped shaped cakes
right.
that are baked in honor of Astarte or Ashtoreth,
yeah.
who was the moon goddess.
Yeah. And, of course, since Islam worships the moon, and they have a totally lunar calendar, it makes sense that their symbol would be the crescent, right? And then now the Queen of Heaven, I think Catholicism still honors Easter, Astarte.
Well, yes, there is a clear etymological connection between Ashtoreth, Astarte, and Ishtar,
right.
The fertility goddess.
Right. That's why you have bunnies laying Easter eggs, right?
Well, yes, it's all about fertility.
Yes,
and that's why fertility. Yeah, you know, I believe in a solar lunar calendar, don't get me wrong, and I know we differ on that,
yeah.
But that they use strictly a lunar calendar,
right,
in the determination of Easter, and they get it all wrong, right? They follow,
sure,
the Jews and get it all wrong. But
yeah.
I believe that's probably connected, too.
Right. Well, they wait for the full moon after the spring equinox for their Catholic calendar. The Jews wait for the moon before the spring equinox, or new moon. So one is based on new moon, the other one is based on the full moon, okay? So they're worlds apart, okay? Yeah, and so we see ancient Canaanite paganism still being practiced today. It's called Islam, it's called Catholicism. Okay.
Well, Islam, I think, is a mixture of Canaanite paganism and Judaism that the Jews stirred up and concocted into a recipe in order to control the pagan Arab masses.
Right. Excellent. Very well put. Very well put. Okay. Verse 19. Do they provoke me to anger? Yes, they do. Do they not provoke themselves to the confusion of their own faces? Ooh.
Well, that's, you know, I know we want to, that's not the same confusion of face in Isaiah, right?
No.
The Septuagint and the NAS both have here that they may be ashamed. That's how they understood this.
Oh, right, this, okay.
As an idiom. But it's not the same confusion of face that we see in Isaiah.
Okay.
That we, I believe, correctly.
There it is.
Insist is a sign of mixed race, right?
Right, yeah, because there it says that they are not ashamed of what they're doing, right? So there's no shame involved in when those people are race-mixing in Isaiah. Okay, verse 20. Therefore, thus says Yahweh Elohim, behold, my anger and my fury shall be poured out upon this place, upon man and upon beast and upon the trees of the field and upon the fruit of the ground, and it shall burn and shall not be quenched. Thus says Yahweh of hosts, the God of Israel, put your burnt offerings to your sacrifices and eat flesh. Okay, this shouldn't it say put away?
Put your burnt offerings under your, I think he's telling them basically to keep
doing it because I'm going to judge you, in other words, is saying. So keep doing it. He's kind of like not mocking them, but saying, you know, since you defy me, just keep doing it. Just keep the
right. I pulled my Bible works off to the Book of Numbers when I
okay.
When I,
but
so,
it sounds
so,
like that. See, he's mocking the Israelites here. Okay.
I believe so. But the NAS says that thus says Yahweh of hosts, the God of Israel, add your burnt offerings to your sacrifices and eat flesh. And he's not accepting their sacrifices,
right,
for sins. So he probably is. It does seem plausible that he's mocking them.
Yeah. So yeah, add sounds better here. Okay. Verse 22. For I spoke not to your fathers nor commanded them in the day that I brought them out of the land of Egypt concerning burnt offerings or sacrifice. Yeah, that came later. Okay. That came with the Levitical priesthood. Verse 23. But this thing commanded I them, saying, obey my voice, and I will be your God, and you shall be my people, and walk you in all the ways that I have commanded you, that it may be well to you. Okay.
And right, and the original law, if you go look at Exodus, the first things given to the children of Israel with Exodus 19, which is basically the wedding ceremony between Yahweh and the nation of Israel.
Uh-huh.
He laid down the law and they agreed to it.
Right.
And that was just, you know, that's like saying, will you keep, honor, love, and obey and all that?
Right.
And they said,
keep,
yes,
my law.
Well,
exactly.
Well, right. And the first thing he gave them was the Ten Commandments.
Yes.
And Exodus chapter 20 is the Ten Commandments. Now, These verses, 21, 22, 23, a lot of people take these statements too literally, and I've actually seen people use these statements to imagine that the sacrifices were added later by other hands to the scripture. Yet we see that the ritual sacrifices were a clear part of the temple discipline and the law in all the inscriptions, in all the copies of our manuscripts. And the New Testament witnesses to the Old Testament, and they should certainly know, and among all of the Aryan nations in our early pre-Christian travels, that they kept these sacrifices and rituals even into their paganism, right?
Right.
And Paul said, the things the nations sacrifice, they sacrifice to demons and not to God.
Right.
Because their sacrifices had become basically pagan law-breaking sacrifices, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I wouldn't these verses don't really support that idea, and the broader look at Scripture surely doesn't support it. However, it is true that the Israelites in the desert were given the Ten Commandments first, Yahweh is simply saying that our desire for obedience is much more important than the conduct of rituals that were added to the law primarily as penalties for disobedience.
Yes, exactly, exactly. Well, yeah, it laid out all the various penalties, and that came in with the Levitical priesthood, and that came later. You know, so, the law was given first, and the Aaronic priesthood was established first, and then the Levitical priesthood. And then the sacrifices came in with the Levites. Okay, very good. Yeah, it was definitely established by Yahweh. It wasn't established by somebody else. Okay, verse 24, but they hearkened not, nor inclined their ear, but walked in the counsel and the imagination of their evil heart, and went backward and not forward. And that's probably why he had to institute the ritual sacrifices, to discipline his people. Verse 25, since the day that your fathers came forth out of the land of Egypt to this day, I have sent you to all my servants, the prophets. Or sent to you, rather, all my servants the prophets, daily rising up early and sending them. Yet they hearkened not to me, nor inclined their ear, but hardened their neck, and they did worse than their fathers. Of course, he's speaking of Jeremiah, Ezekiel, Isaiah, Elijah, Elisha, etc., etc. Verse 26, yet they hearkened not to me, nor inclined their ear, but hardened their neck, they did worse than their fathers. Therefore, you shall speak all these words to them. Now, he's talking directly to Jeremiah here. Therefore, you shall speak all these words to them, but they will not hearken to you. You shall also call to them, but they will not answer you. But you shall say to them, this is a nation that obeys not the voice of Yahweh their God, nor receives correction. Truth is perished and is cut off from their mouth. Now, let me replace Jeremiah with Christian Identity, okay? But they will not hearken to Christian Identity. You, Identist, shall call to them, but they will not answer you. And you, Identist, shall say to them, this is a nation that obeys not the voice of Yahweh, nor receives correction. Truth is perished from them and is cut off from their mouth. It's happening all over again. Verse 29.
Well, all right, and that's not haughty. That's just that Christian Identity is the truth.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, but there is a generation that refuses to hear the truth. Verse 29.
Well, there's no path to the truth without going through Identity. Let's put it that way.
That's right. There's no doubt. Yeah. Verse 29, cut off your hair, O Jerusalem, and cast it away, and take up a lamentation on high places, for Yahweh has rejected and forsaken the generation of his wrath, and that includes the modern generation of churchianity. Verse 30, for the children of Judah have done evil in my sight, says Yahweh. They have set their abominations in the house which is called by my name to pollute it. And they have built the high places of Tophet, and that's where they burned the children. The firstborn children, they threw them into the fire, which is in the valley of the son of Hinnom, to burn their sons and their daughters in the fire, to burn their sons and their daughters in the fire, which I commanded them not, neither came it into my heart.
Well, let me say that I believe it is literal.
Yes.
But it's also George Lamb's, and I don't agree with much of what he said, with anything he says about the New Testament.
Okay.
Let me throw that in. But George Lamb's, it does seem to do well with certain Aramaic idioms.
Right.
And he claims that this is an idiom for race mixing.
Okay.
But there would be no difference. If you allow if you raise your children right, and they go and race mix, that's
uh-huh.
not your fault.
Right.
I mean, that's because society won in the mind of your child.
Right.
And I'm going through that now in my personal life, right? And we all are, I think.
Yes.
Or we know somebody who is. If you allow your child to race mix, you may as well feed them through the fire.
Right.
You may as well have aborted them, right?
Exactly.
I mean, there's no different. If you allowed it, then you're partaking in his murder.
Right.
And abortion is murder, don't get me wrong. And the Hebrews did practice this. They did abort their children by sacrificing them to the foreign idols.
That's right.
And the Carthaginians, who were Israelite Phoenicians, they did the same thing. It was written about by the Greeks. The earliest Greeks did it, and many of them were Israelites.
Yeah, well,
One of the major sub themes to the story of the Trojan War is the sacrifice by Agamemnon of his daughter to a pagan goddess, so that he could have fair weather and the Danans could sail to Troy.
Right. Well,
so child sacrifice plays into the earliest Greek stories, and the Greeks also exposed their children, which is the manner of giving them up to die that the Hebrews were forced to practice by the Egyptians.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
To expose them, to just wait them out in the field so that you could think that your hands are free of blood. But of course they're going to be eaten by wolves, right?
Sure, sure. Yeah, or die a very painful death in the sun, you know, exposure. Yes. Yeah, and so in the book of Revelation, we're told that the fornications of Mystery Babylon will plague the earth. Well, all of these things, all of these evil practices were part of ancient Babylon. Okay.
Absolutely, and now we have them in modern Babylon.
Exactly.
There's no lie, it's the same thing all over again.
Yes.
Where you have Jews, you have perversion.
That's right. That's right. Verse 32, therefore, behold, the days come, says Yahweh, that it shall no more be called Tophet, nor the valley of the son of Hinnom, but the valley of slaughter. For they shall bury in Tophet till there be no place. And the carcasses of this people shall be meat for the fowls of heaven and for the beasts of the earth, and none shall fray them away or frighten them away. Then will I cause to cease from the cities of Judah and from the streets of Jerusalem the voice of mirth and the voice of gladness, the voice of the bridegroom and the voice of the bride, for the land shall be desolate. Now, of course, all of this, this judgment upon the city of Jerusalem and the house of Judah, also foreshadows the judgment of Israel, modern Israel, in the world today. You know, Peter says judgment comes first to the house of Israel, okay? And we are seeing our people are being judged for their sins.
Well, they don't even know it, though.
That's right.
And they're cheering it on.
Well, they're not listening. Neither were these Judahites listening, were they?
Absolutely not.
Right. It's happening all over again. All right, chapter 8, verse 1. At that time, says Yahweh, they shall bring out the bones of the kings of Judah and the bones of his princes and the bones of the priests and the bones of the prophets and the bones of the inhabitants of Jerusalem out of their graves. And, of course, these are the ossuaries. And they shall spread them before the sun and the moon and all the host of heaven, whom they have loved, okay, so they've made gods and goddesses of these dearly departed, and whom they have served, and after whom they have walked, and whom they have sought, and whom they have worshipped, they shall not be gathered, nor be buried, they shall be for dung upon the face of the earth. So much that, for now, all these gods, right?
Well, right, but this it's talking about the bones of the rulers, the bones of the kings, the bones of the prophets.
Right.
And it doesn't say false prophets. It we have to assume that it's the legitimate prophets also.
Right.
And I think that this is an allegory. It means that the history of the nation shall become as trash. Which is exactly what it has become today.
Yeah.
Because we as a society attribute it to the Jews, and the Jews don't care about it one bit.
Right.
The history of ancient Israel has become as trash.
Yeah.
And if you even try to tell Christians today about the ancient and illustrious history of Israel and Judah, they don't even want to hear it.
Right.
And I really think that's what this is talking about.
Yeah.
That's because the bones of the kings and the bones of the prophets, that's basically the history of the nation.
Uh-huh.
And Yahweh's saying, you're going to be punished, you're going to be chastised and taken off, and the history of your nation is going to become as trash.
Yes, yes. Yeah, and they're trashing our history today still, right? They're trying to deny the history of true Israel. Verse 3, and death shall be chosen rather than life, by all the residue of them that remain of this evil family, which remain in all the places where I have driven them, says Yahweh of hosts. Moreover, you shall say to them, thus says Yahweh, shall they fall and not arise? Shall he turn away and not return? Why then is this people of Jerusalem slidden back by a perpetual backsliding? They hold fast deceit. They refuse to return. So they love the lie. Verse 6, I hearkened and heard, but they spoke not aright. No man repented him of his wickedness, saying, what have I done? Everyone turned to his course as the horse rushes into the battle, so that they have become habitually wicked. Verse 7, yea, the stork in the heaven knows her appointed times, and the turtle and the crane and the swallow observe the time of their coming, but my people know not the justice of Yahweh. How do you say we are wise and the law of the Lord is with us? Lo, certainly in vain made he it. The pen of the scribes is in vain. The wise men are ashamed. They are dismayed and taken. Lo, they have rejected the word of Yahweh, and what wisdom is in them?
I have a few notes on this psalm.
Okay.
On this section. You know, first, from verse 3, that the, I'm sorry, verses 1 and 2, I'm sorry, verse 3,
yeah.
And death shall, they shall choose death.
Yeah.
Death shall be chosen rather than life by all the residue of them that remain of this evil family.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, you know, Yahweh told us through Jeremiah that there were good and bad things, right?
Right.
This to me seems to foresee the rejection of Christ by the Judahite traditionalists,
uh-huh,
who chose death, the
yes,
ways of the Pharisees and the Sadducees, rather than life in the Word of God.
Right.
Even many of the good things. And in a few chapters, I think it's chapter 19 or maybe 18, what we'll see the parable of the good and bad figs of Jerusalem. And,
right,
and even a lot of the good figs in their dispersion, history tells us anyway, that they had eventually become race-mixed in Babylon and the surrounding area.
Yeah.
They chose death. And therefore, we cannot consider any Jew ever to be good.
Right.
We're told that this remnant, this residue of them that remain, are going to choose death.
Yeah.
So anybody that claims to be a Judahite or a Jew and from the first century has to be a member of this group. That there's no way around this.
Mm-hmm.
They chose death.
Yeah.
They stayed in the Jewish religion. Their ancestors stayed in Judaism, meaning they rejected Christ.
Right.
They chose death. It's that simple. It's black and white.
Yeah.
There's
yeah,
no gray there. There's absolutely no gray.
Yeah, well, now, Jesus said, you're either for me or against me. There's no in between.
I would like to comment on verse 6. I hearkened and heard, but they spake not aright. No man repented. No man repented him of his wickedness, saying, what have I done?
Yeah.
In other words, the sinner who is unrepentant would wonder why he's being punished.
Right.
And today, just as we refuse to ask ourselves when we suffer calamity, what have I done?
Right.
Rather, we would ignore the fact that the crisis, the word, The word crisis is the Greek word that means judgment.
Mm-hmm.
And our ancestors, when they started calling bad things that happened to themselves crises, they knew what they were talking about.
Right.
They knew that, they knew exactly how to frame that, that if they were suffering calamity, that was a crisis, meaning it was a judgment. It was a test or a judgment against them.
Right.
From God.
Yeah.
And today people refuse to see that and rather seek to place the blame for their misfortune upon others.
That's right.
And that's
what the Jews
do. Exactly.
Uh-huh.
And now verse 8 is a very important verse. How do you say we are wise and the law of the Lord is with us? Lo, certainly in vain made he it. And that's King James language, right?
Right.
The pen of the scribes is in vain. I'd like to read that from the Septuagint and from the NAS, and we'll see it a lot clearer, right? How will you say we are wise, this is Brenton Septuagint, and the law of the Lord is with us? In vain have the scribes used a false pen, the NAS. How can you say we are wise and the law of the Lord is with us? But behold, the lying pen of the scribes has made it into a lie.
Right.
So we see that already by Jeremiah's time, the law was corrupted by the scribes.
Yeah.
And when we see, when if you want to see who the scribes are, go to the end of 1 Chronicles, chapter 1, I think it is, and you'll see that the Kenites are the scribes in Jerusalem.
Right. Yeah, well, they were hired for that purpose, and there were Judahite scribes as well.
Well, who do you hire when you need a scribe today?
Right.
Most
yes.
people go for a Jew lawyer. It's the same thing all over again. Nothing's changed.
Right. Exactly.
I would like to say that what we do not really know exactly what they've corrupted. What we may never know, right? Until it's over, right?
Well, it's not necessarily the case that they actually took the Hebrew scriptures and rewrote them. It could just mean that they misinterpreted them or, you know, put laws into effect that were contrary to the scriptures. You know, so it's hard to say exactly what they did, but just writing a false edict would be, you know, a perfect example of this.
Well, right, but this is also, by the law here, the Torah is referred to, the five books of Moses.
Yeah.
It's always been considered the Torah or the law. And I would say that we can't jump to conclusions that certain things are corrupt unless we have solid evidence.
Right.
And this, to me, it supports our theses concerning Genesis 4:1 and Deuteronomy 23:7.
Yeah.
And verses that we can, where we can see that the Hebrew language is can be questioned from a scholarly perspective.
Uh-huh.
And we can't simply consider any individual passage suspect simply because we do not like it. But if we have a substantive reason for debating particular passages, and we could show that we have a substantive reason, we have to consider those things.
Yeah.
And that's just the way it is. People can't take for granted that the so-called Jews preserved the so-called Torah, which they find in their Masoretic text, in its perfection down through all these thousands of years, as the Jews like to advertise, right?
Yeah.
Because Jeremiah, even by his time, says here that parts of it are already screwed up.
Right. That's right. Yeah, and we really have no way of knowing just what, you know, was tampered with. Yes. Okay, very good. Verse 10. Therefore, let's see, did you want to comment on verse 9, too, or just...
Well, no, except that this is the same situation that we're in today, you know?
Oh, yeah.
The wisest and smartest men, the men that we perceive to be the wisest and the smartest,
yeah,
that they've rejected God altogether.
Well, they're the ones on television, right? The liberals. Yeah. Okay, very good. Verse 10, therefore will I give their wives to others and their fields to them that shall inherit them, for everyone from the least even to the greatest is given to covetousness. From the prophet even to the priest, everyone deals falsely. For they have healed the hurt of the daughter of my people slightly, saying, peace, peace, when there is no peace. We have the same thing going on today, folks.
Right. That first, this verse 9 supports what I said at the beginning of this evening, where I talked about even Jeremiah attesting to false prophets in his time, right?
Yes.
And where it says that they healed the wound of the daughter of his people slightly, that word should really probably be, as the NAS has it, superficially.
Okay, yeah.
And as one further note, verses 11 and 12 here are missing from the Septuagint. They're wanting the Septuagint.
They put a Band-Aid on a gaping wound, right?
well, right. It's a superficial.
Yeah.
And this is the political ploy of the Jews today, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, China is robbing, all of the intellectual wealth and industrial capacity of our nation, what was sent to China, as time and again the Senate voted China most favored nation's trading status. Right? And they superficially healed our economy by creating a real estate bubble, an internet bubble, a technology bubble, and one bubble after another, and they're all just superficial Band-Aids.
And there's no more soap in the soap dish to create any more bubbles.
well, evidently, it's the next bubble is might just burst, right?
Yes, right. That's right. Okay, very good. Verse 12. Were they ashamed when they had committed abomination? Nay, they were not at all ashamed, neither could they blush. Therefore shall they fall among them that fall. In the time of their visitation they shall be cast down, says Yahweh.
I'd like to quote Job 40:12 here. Look on everyone that is proud and bring him low.
Right.
Down the wicked in their place. Pride is equated in Job 40:12 with evil.
Uh-huh.
And that idea is repeated in Luke, in James, in Paul, and in Peter, all four of them. That Yahweh will humble the exalted. Those who exalt themselves will be humbled, right?
Yeah. Yep, absolutely. Pride comes before a fall. Verse 13, I will surely consume them, says Yahweh. There shall be no grapes on the vine, nor figs on the fig tree, and the leaf shall fade, and the things that I have given them shall pass away from them. Now, this entire, most of these chapters are all illustrating the fact that when we obey his laws, we prosper. When we disobey his laws, we have hard times. Verse 14, why do we sit still? Assemble yourselves, and let us enter into the defense cities, and let us be silent there. For Yahweh our God has put us to silence and given us water of gall to drink, because we have sinned against Yahweh. Now, these are the good Judahites saying this. Verse 15, we looked for peace, but no good came, and for a time of health, behold, trouble. The snorting of his horses was heard from Dan. The whole land trembled at the sound of the neighing of his strong ones, for they are come and have devoured the land and all that is in it, the city and those that dwell therein. Anything of significance here?
Well, no. This is only a parable concerning the Babylonians. And the next verse says, for behold, I will send serpents, cockatrices among you, which will not be charmed, and they shall bite you, says Yahweh. It's only a parable concerning the Babylonians.
Right.
It's their horses, their serpents.
Yeah.
And you know, I would say that if the Babylonians, a good number of them are probably descended from the Amorites and Kenites anyway, right?
Right.
I mean, there's no doubt that the Chaldeans, who were Syrians, they were of noble Adamic blood, but they mixed with the Kenites and Amorites of Babylonia, of ancient Babylonia, and became a mongrelized people and a very heavily superstitious and pagan people.
Right, right. Is it possible that it means that the Babylonian army literally came through the territory that Dan had vacated?
Well, where it says the snorting of his horses was heard from Dan, it means that as far away, you know, Dan is like a far away place. The northernmost place in Israel. And that's the picture being drawn here, that you could even hear them that far away. It's referring to the land of Dan, not to the tribe.
Right.
The tribe of Dan is long gone.
Yeah.
They're gone probably most of them are gone even before the Assyrians, because they're not mentioned in the Assyrian deportations of Israel.
Right, right, yeah. And then they migrated first to Greece, correct?
Well, many, yeah, you know, Danans were in Greece by the time of the Exodus.
Okay.
Okay? Yeah. But they weren't the tribe of Dan in Palestine. It was a large number of Dan who migrated. And Diodorus Siculus, the first century B.C. historian, who's quoting, I believe it was Menander of Ephesus, in the 38th book of his Library of History,
yeah,
he gives sort of an Egyptian version of the Exodus account, right?
Uh-huh.
Where he tries to say that the aliens were expelled from Egypt. And he says rather explicitly that the aliens were expelled from Egypt, and that's the Egyptian political spin on it, right?
Right.
And
yeah,
that many of them left by sea and founded the notable cities in Greece,
uh-huh, yes,
and elsewhere.
Yes, yeah. But
and he says the rest of them went with Moses.
Yes.
And he says that explicitly.
Yes, yeah. And those would be the Danite portion of those Israelites who left Egypt before the Exodus. Those would be known as the Tuatha de Danann, okay, that wound up in Ireland. But
I would say, yeah, the Tuatha de Danann, I believe that they are the ones that left before the Exodus became the Danans of the Peloponnesus of Greece that fought the Trojans in the Trojan War.
Right.
And that was an Israelite civil war, because it could be established that the Trojans were the tribe of Judah.
Yeah.
Now that they also, I believe that the Boeotians and other Greek groups, later Greek groups, descended from those Danans
uh-huh,
probably the Macedonians also.
Right.
Now the Dorians invaded that land and enslaved and drove off most of the Danans.
Okay.
Around 80 years, two or three generations after the Trojan War, that's a fact of Greek history. That now the Tuatha de Danann, from everything I've read, appear in Ireland in the 8th century B.C.,
okay,
which is about this time. Of the Assyrian invasions.
Right. Okay. Okay.
So I think that's where they came from.
And they were known to travel with the Phoenicians, who are
Israelites. Sardinia, that word, and that's an ancient word. I mean, the Greeks and Romans called that island Sardinia from when writing began, right?
Yeah.
Sardinia, I believe, comes from two Hebrew words, shar, which means a remnant,
uh-huh,
and Dan.
Okay.
Shardana. Shardana is the word in the ancient inscriptions, archaeological inscriptions referring to Sardinia. Call it Shardana. I can establish right with a strong concordance that Shardana means remnant of Dan.
Uh-huh. Very good. Very good. So the Dorian, I'm trying to identify the Danite remnant that went straight to Greece from this, from the Assyrian, just before the Assyrian captivities, okay? That would
I don't have a record of Danans landing in Greece in the 8th century B.C.
Okay, okay. So
I just don't. I think that they left, that there's some Israel identity writers are confused.
Uh-huh.
The Danans arrived in Greece in the 15th century B.C., they were the founders, or maybe the 16th, they were the founders of the civilization that we know as Mycenaean.
Right.
Now, I've established in the writings on my website that modern archaeologists, are perplexed with the quote-unquote Mycenaean graves, which were found at Tel Dan. Well, I'm not perplexed, because the founders of Mycenaean culture were Danans.
Right.
The king from Egypt.
Yes.
And that's the connection there. I mean, that's not a hard connection to make.
Right.
So, now those are the Danans that fought against the Trojans, that won the Trojan War. It was a costly victory. It allowed the Dorians to move right into Danan territory.
Okay.
Two or three generations later, the Dorians were Israelites. They profess in their writings that they were Israelites. It can be demonstrated from the pages of Josephus that they were Israelites. And they came, and it can be demonstrated circumstantially from the pages of Homer's Iliad that they were Israelites,
okay.
Because Homer only places them on Crete. He only knows them on Crete.
Uh-huh.
Crete was midway sea point between Palestine and Greece, right?
Okay.
And Homer only knew of them on Crete. That doesn't mean they weren't further east.
Right.
The mainstream historians look for a Dorian homeland in the north. That's a total lie. All the accounts say that the Heraclidae brought the Dorians into the Peloponnese. I could establish that Heracles is also a Hebrew word, and it means the traitors. Ha-Rakalim is Heracles. And it, the personification, the Heracles tale, is the personification of the Phoenician merchants. The Phoenician merchants brought the Dorians, who were from Dor in Palestine,
right.
And the archaeological strata can also be used to prove my point, because so-called Dorian architecture was found at Dor. Dorian meaning Greek architecture was found at Dor,
yeah.
in the ancient land of Manasseh, from a strata preceding the Assyrian invasions of Israel.
Very good.
The Dorians were Israelites, yeah. And they migrated to the Peloponnesus probably in the very end of the 12th century B.C., at two or three generations after the Trojan Wars. They took the Peloponnesus from the Danans. Their two crown jewel cities in Greece were Corinth and Sparta.
Okay. So now what territory, which tribe's territory was the city of Dor located in? Was that
Manasseh.
Danite or was that Ganath?
It was Manasseh. Yes, sir.
Okay, very good. All right, let's.
And I could also establish that there were Levitical priests found in the bullae of the archaeology of Dor at that same strata level, but all the way back to the 10th and 11th century.
Well, I mean, yeah, well, Solomon's Temple, I mean, yeah, our people did a lot of building back then. Certainly,
Jews
never built any temples.
A lot of Bible students, mainstream Bible students, oh, no, Dor was a Philistine city. Oh, no, it was a Canaanite city. Well, I could establish through the archaeology that there was a strong Israelite presence there, and that the Israelites took it, whether the Bible records it or not, the Israelites took it from the Canaanites and the Philistines.
Very good. Very good. Okay, verse 17. For behold, I will send serpents, cockatrices. And what is a cockatrice? Maybe some kind. Is that another type of snake among you, which will be not charmed, and they shall bite you, says Yahweh. When I would comfort myself against sorrow, my heart is faint in me. Behold, the voice of the cry of the daughter of my people, because of them that dwell in a far country. Is not Yahweh in Zion? Is not her king in her? Why have they provoked me to anger with their graven images and with their strange vanities? The harvest is past, the summer is ended, and we are not saved. For the hurt of the daughter of my people am I hurt. I am black, and this does not mean his skin is black. Astonishment has taken hold on me. Is there no balm in Gilead? Is there no physician there? Why, then, is not the health of the daughter of my people recovered? Because she's still sinning. That's why. So, and this is one of the, on the many of the black Hebrew sites, and there seems to be more of them springing up. They claim that the blacks are the descendants of the Hebrews, right? And they
right. It's absolutely ludicrous.
Right.
It's the most ludicrous thing I ever heard.
Right.
And black, it is usually an indication in Scripture that you are in a state of poverty, of lowliness, of depression, Jeremiah in his Lamentations says that his Nazarenes were as white as milk.
Yes,
but yet their faces are black from the trial that they've been
through. Right. So in the ancient Hebrew language, I'm black is what we mean by today when we say I'm blue.
Absolutely.
Okay. That's all it means. It doesn't mean his skin is black, right? But they will take this little, treat it as a sentence, right, out of verse 21 in Jeremiah chapter 8 and say, see, that's proof. He's a black man.
Well, you know, the Negroes have like 75 IQs, right? That's their average. They can be convinced of anything real simple.
And they love their language. They lost it.
They love the Song of Solomon, right, where it says, I am black. But right away it says, the sun has tanned me.
Yes.
Right. Has darkened me, right?
Yes.
And in chapter 5, it talks about how ivory white his skin was.
Yeah.
So what's the problem here?
Right.
There is no problem once you understand what the hell it's saying. He's black because the sun, as it says, shines out and has scorched him.
Yes, exactly. All right, very good. This Jeremiah is outstanding stuff. Looking forward to continuing this next Friday. Tomorrow we're going to continue our series and probably finish our series on the Epistles of John. Okay. And then Sunday, Greg Howard and I will be doing the Testament of Dan. Okay, since we brought him up this evening, we'll be doing the Testament of Dan. And I'm going to try to get a hold of Pastor Visser, and maybe since the Testament of Dan is very short compared to the others, perhaps have him come on for about half an hour and tell us, give us what the story. You know, so many of us are curious as to what exactly happened, and you know, why he was raided and why he was prosecuted. And for those of us, for those listening who weren't with us at the beginning, his court case is over. His case was dismissed. He is a free man again. Not being, well, you never know. They're not going to stop hassling us in Christian Identity. But at least for the time being, he has had his day in court, and he is he is a free man, and not being harassed by the feds. And Bill, you want to announce your streaming audios again, et cetera, for those who weren't here before.
Christogenia has a streaming internet radio station now. It's listed in the public stations on the listing at Shoutcast, at Shoutcast Internet Radio. It's available on my site. You could go to the chat radio and chat page on my site. There's a chat window. It's active. It's live. It's real time. It works. And I can ban trolls by IP number. So
great.
Who insist on trolling my site, once they're banned from my entire site, right?
Right. Good.
So it's that they won't be able to do too much to the site whatsoever.
Yeah.
And the internet radio is at christogenia.org/8000/live.
Okay.
That URL is not for your browser. That URL is for your media player. If you want to put it in your VLC or Winamp media player or Windows media player, you could put christogenia.org, http://christogenia.org/8000/live.
Okay.
And I plan on expanding it into four channels before I pray before the end of this year. I'm going to add a second server to it. Each server is going to run two channels, and they're going to cycle through all of the 300 and so programs, podcasts I've done with you, with Brian and alone and with Clifton. I'm going to cycle them all on one of those channels and just let them run.
Yes, very good.
So the Christian will be 24/7 operation.
Yeah, Christian Identity is becoming mainstream. It's just a question of, you know, how much can white Israelites take? How much more can they take of all this Jewish culture that has been destroying the white race, okay? And certainly it's just like a drug addict, right? Give me more cocaine. And these white Christians, white Judeo-Christians, they just want more Judaism. Whether they realize it's Judaism or not, they're hooked on it. It's a drug. The lie. It's a drug called a lie, right? And that's what they're hooked on. And we're doing our best to get them unhooked. And one more announcement for me. Starting next Tuesday, 7 p.m. Central Time, Tuesday and Thursdays from now on, I will be on the Micro Effect, and it will be the Restoration Hour, a one-hour show, for as long as we can keep it going. Okay, so So look for me next Tuesday and Thursday at 7 p.m. on the Micro Effect, the Restoration Hour. Bill, looking forward to speaking with you again tomorrow night. We should be finishing the Epistles of John. And praise Yahweh.
Praise Yahweh.
Thank you all for listening. Yahweh bless everybody.